ay, 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 ay,
Hello, I'm Adrian Iosifescu, your host of the History of the Romanian Jews podcast, and you are listening to episode 15. Today we'll be discussing Hasidic Judaism and its relationship to the Romanian lands. By the way, at the beginning of the episode, you've listened to some Hasidic music. Links to this song and others can be found in the episode's notes. Let's talk first about Haredi Jews. Strictly Orthodox Jews are often referred to as Haredi, which stems from the Hebrew word hared, meaning to tremble. Adding meaning is drawn from a verse of Isaiah in which God says, "But to this one I will look, to him who is humble and contrite of spirit and who trembles at my word." Haredi is something of a catch-all term and encompasses a broad range of groups who are socially conservative Orthodox Jews, but of varying practices and traditions. They are united, however, in their absolute adherence to the Torah and determining every aspect of their lives. Defining people as Orthodox is a comparatively modern thing that did not come up until the advent of Reformed Judaism in the 19th century. The term ultra-Orthodox is frowned upon, as ultra is thought to suggest extremism. While some may refer to themselves as Haredi, others may use the term Heimische Iden, meaning traditional Jews in Yiddish. The word is pronounced with a long I rather than a short one, as would be in the racial slur. The Haredis are loosely divided into Hasidic and Misnagdim. Misnagdim, which literally means opponents, was a religious movement among the Jews of Eastern Europe, which resisted and opposed the rise of Hasidism in the 18th and 19th centuries. The Misnagdim were particularly concentrated in Lithuania. The most severe clashes between the factions took place in the later third of the 18th century. The failure to contain Hasidism led the Misnagdim to develop distinct religious philosophies and communal institutions, which were not merely a perpetuation of the old status quo, but often innovative. The most notable result of these efforts, pioneered by Chaim of Volozhin and continued by his disciples, were the modern independent yeshiva and the Musar movement. The Musar movement is a Jewish spiritual practice that gives concrete instructions on how to live a meaningful and ethical life. Musar is virtue-based ethics, based on the idea that by cultivating inner virtues, we improve ourselves, in contrast to most Jewish ethical teachings, which are rule-based. Since the late 19th century, tensions with the Hasidim largely subsided and the heirs of Misnagdim adopted the epithet of Litvaks. But let's leave Misnagdim for now and return to our main topic, Hasidim. Hasidim is a lifestyle and ideology that each sect expresses differently, though they share the common values of love of God, love for all Jewish people, and love of studying the Torah. The Hasidic movement was founded in the 18th century by Rabbi Israel ben Eliezer, known as the Baal Shem Tov, which means Master of the Good Name. Born south of the Prut in the northern frontier of Moldova in Romania. Little is known for certain about Israel ben Eliezer. Through not a scholar, he was sufficiently learned to become notable in the communal hall of study and marry into the rabbinical elite, his wife being the divorced sister of a rabbi. In his late years, he became wealthy and famous, as attested by contemporary chronicles. Apart from that, most information about him is derived from Hasidic hagiographic accounts. This claim that as a boy he was recognized by one Rabbi Adam Baal Shem Tov, who entrusted him with great secrets of the Torah, passed in his illustrious family for centuries. That Baal Shem Tov later spent a decade in the Carpathian Mountains as a hermit, where he was visited by the biblical prophet Elijah, who taught him more, and that at the age of 36 he was granted heavenly permission to reveal himself as a great Kabbalist and a miracle worker. By the 1740s, it is verified that he relocated to the town of Megiddo in western Ukraine and became recognized and popular in Podolia, which would be west central and southwestern parts of Ukraine and northern Moldova and beyond. It is well attested that he emphasized several known Kabbalistic concepts, formulating his own teaching to some degree. He taught about God's love for all Jewish people. Also important to his teachings was an emphasis on one's individual connection to God through the Torah and mitzvah, good deeds and divine commandments from the Torah. The Baal Shem Tov stressed the immanence of God and his presence in the material world, and that, therefore, physical acts such as eating have an actual influence on the spiritual sphere and may serve to hasten the achievement of the communion with the divine, the Vekut. He was known to pray ecstatically and with great intention in order to provide channels for the divine light to flow into the earthly realm. The Baal Shem Tov stressed the importance of joy and contentment in worship of God, rather than abstinence and self-mortification deemed essential to becoming a pious mystic, and of fever and vigorous prayer as a means of spiritual elation instead of severe asceticism. But many of his immediate disciples reverted in part to the old doctrines, especially in disavowing sexual pleasure even in marital relations. In that, Baal Shem Tov laid the foundation for a popular movement, offering a far less rigorous course for the masses to gain a significant religious experience. At that time, the Hasidim, which is a Hebrew word for pious ones, numbered in the millions in Eastern and Central Europe. Jewish mysticism is an essential part of Hasidic teaching. Hasidic leaders strive to make Jewish mystical texts, such as the Kabbalistic writings of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Isaac Luria, accessible and practical to all followers. Music and stories are an important part of the Hasidic culture, inspiring a deeper connection between man and God. Hasidim is noted for its religious conservatism and social seclusion. Its members adhere closely both to Orthodox Jewish practice and to the traditions of Eastern European Jews, like various special types of dresses and the use of the Yiddish language, which are nowadays associated almost exclusively with Hasidim. Hasidic teachings emphasize God's immanence in the universe, the need to be one with Him at all times, the devotional aspect of religious practice, and the spiritual dimension of corporeal reality and mundane acts. Hasidim, the adherents of Hasidism, are organized in independent sects known as courts or dynasties, each headed by its own hereditary male leader, a rabbi. Reverence and submission to the rabbi are key tenets, and he is considered a spiritual authority with whom the follower must bond to gain closeness to God. The various courts share basic convictions, but operate apart and possess unique traits and customs. Affiliation is often retained in families for generations, And being Hasidic is as much a sociological factor and entailing birth into a specific community and allegiance to a dynasty of rabbis as it is a religious one. Let's look now briefly at the factors which can be said to have characterized and influenced the period of Jewish history when Hasidism had spread. One main cause was the confounding instability of Jewish life in those years, as experienced by the Jewish communities in Podolia and southeastern Poland, which included the massacre of entire Jewish communities perpetrated by the enslaved Ukrainian peasants rebelling against their Polish masters during an uprising in 1668 headed by Bogdan Khmelnytsky, the Russo-Swedish War, which was fought for control of the Polish-Lithuanian kingdom, a conflict which took place in 1654-1656 in Poland and Lithuania and resulted in mass murder of thousands of Jews who were charged as traitors by the Poles. And then the ongoing Muslim-Tatar incursions into the Ukraine to capture white slaves for the markets of the Muslim world between 1660 and 1669, the Turkish invasion of Podolia in 1699, and finally the Great Northern War between 1700 and 1721 that was fought between Russia and Sweden on Polish soil in relation to the coronation of August the 2nd of Saxony as the King of Poland, who was supported by the Russian Tsar and rejected by the Swedish King. This war was followed by an internal Polish war, the War of the Polish Succession in 1733-38, between August the 3rd, supported by the Russians, and Stanislaw Leszczynski, supported by the Swedes. The loss of life within the Jewish community in the Ukraine and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth between the years of 1648 and 1768 was overwhelmingly in the sheer numbers involved in the course of the Ukrainian revolt. Almost 100,000 Jews perished at the hands of the Cossacks, according to Polish historians. Mass pogroms of Jews also broke out in those areas from which Polish forces had withdrawn, and the various wars and invasions that followed. The second major phenomenon that marked this period in Jewish history was the rise of Sabbatianism, a prophetic messianic movement founded by Sabbatai Zvi in the last third of the 17th century. Sabbatai Zvi was actively supported by the so-called prophet Nathan of Gaza, who maintained that the gift of prophecy has been restored and he had been divinely informed that Sabbatai Zvi is a Messiah. Sabbathian teachings entailed messianic hopes of both meta-historical vengeance against those who murdered thousands of helpless Jews, as well as messianic hopes for redemption of those who survived. The third major phenomenon that affected Jewish life in the period of the formation of Hasidism was the Catholic reaction within Poland, occurring in the last of the 17th century and the beginning of 18th century. The Catholic Church in Poland was threatened by the dissemination of the ideas of the Protestant Reformation in the neighboring countries, Germany, Prussia, Sweden, Netherlands, Denmark, and initiated a number of steps to strengthen its exclusive sacred position in the Polish-Lithuanian kingdom. Those steps included reinstating those medieval anti-Semitic constraints, which included the coerced conversion of Jews to Catholicism, the abduction of Jewish children in order to baptize and raise them as Christians, false accusations against Jews in all economic, social, and religious dimensions, the publication and dissemination of anti-Semitic literature, as well as the frequent orchestration of murderous libels. Finally, another factor was the decline of the traditional authority structures. In general, the magnates and the nobles had much sway over the nomination of both rabbis and communal elders, to such a degree that the masses often perceived them as mere lackeys of the landowners. The leader's ability to serve as legitimate arbiters in disputes, especially those concerning the regulation of leasehold rights over alcohol distillation and other monopolies in the estates, was severely diminished. The reduced prestige of the establishment and the need for an alternative source of authority to pass judgment left a vacuum which Hasidic charismatics eventually filled. They transcended all communal institutions to which all the Jews of a locality were subordinate and had groups of followers in each town across vast territories. Also, the formative age of Hasidism coincided with the rise of numerous religious revival movements across the world, including the First Great Awakening in New England, German Pietism, Wahhabism in Arabia, and the Russian Old Believers who opposed the established church. Hasidism rejected the existing order, decried it as stale and overly hierarchic. They offered what they described as more spiritual, candid, and simple substitute. The propagation of Kabbalah made the Jewish masses susceptible to Hasidic ideas, themselves in essence a popularization version of the teaching. Indeed, Hasidism actually emerged when its founders determined to openly practice it, instead of remaining a secret circle of ascetics, as was the manner of almost all past Kabbalists. Let's look at the Hasidic organization. In the early days of the movement, a particular Rebbe's following usually resided in the same town, and Hasidim were characterized by their leader's settlement, a Hasid of Belz, Vishnitz, and so forth. Later, especially after the Second World War, the dynasties retained the name of their original Eastern European settlement when moving to the West or Israel. Those, for example, the court established by Joel Teitelbaum in 1905 in Transylvania remain known after its namesake town, Satmar, or Satu Mare in Romanian, even though its headquarters lay in New York, and almost all other Hasidic sects likewise, albeit some groups founded overseas were named accordingly, like the Boston Hasidic dynasty. Akin to his spiritual status, the Rebbe is also the administrative head of the community. Sects often possess their own synagogues, study halls, and internal charity mechanism, and once sufficiently large, also maintain entire education systems. The Rebbe is a supreme figure of authority, and not just for the institutions. The rank and file Hasidim are also expected to consult with him on important matters and often seek his blessing and advice. There are several courts with many thousands of member households, which and hundreds of smaller ones as well. The Rebbe is personally attended by aides known as Gebai or Mashbak. Many particular Hasidic rites surround the leader. On the Shabbos, holidays, and celebratory occasions, Rebbe hold a tish, or a table, a large feast for their male adherents. Together, they sing, dance, and eat, and the head of the sect shakes the hands of his followers to bless them and often delivers a sermon. A choser, or a repeater, selected for his good memory, commits the text to writing after the Shabbos, any form of writing during the Shabbos itself being forbidden. In many courts, the remnants of Rebbe's meal, supposedly suffused with holiness, are handed out and even fought over. Often, a very large dish is prepared beforehand, and the Rebbe only tastes it before passing it to the crowd. A central custom which serves as a major factor in the economics of most Kurds is the pidyon or ransom, better known by its Yiddish name gvital, little note. Adherents submit a written petition which the master may assist with on behalf of his sanctity, adding a sum of money for either charity or the leader's needs. As of 2016, there were over 130,000 Hasidic households worldwide, about 5% of the global Jewish population. Approximately half of Hasidic Jews live in Israel, another 30 to 40% in America, and the rest live in communities across the world, most notably in London, Antwerp, and Montreal. The terms Hasid and Hasidut, meaning pietist and piety, have a long history in Judaism. The Talmud and other old sources refer to the pietists of old, Hasidim HaRishonim, who would contemplate an entire hour in preparation for prayer. The phrase denoted extremely devoted individuals who not only observed the law to its letter, but performed good deeds even beyond it. The first to adopt the epithet collectively were apparently the Hasidim in the Second Temple period Judea, known as Hasidian, after the Greek rendering of their name, who perhaps serve as a model for those mentioned in the Talmud. The title continued to be applied as an honorific for the exceptionally devout. In 12th century Rhineland, a loosely defined area of Western Germany along the Rhine, or Ashkenaz in Jewish parlance, another prominent school of ascetics named themselves Hasidim. To distinguish them from the rest, later research employed the term Ashkenazi Hasidim. In the 16th century, when Kabbalah spread, the title also became associated with it. Jacob ben Haim Zima wrote in his glossa on Isaac Luria's version of the Shulchan Aruch that one who wishes to tap the hidden wisdom must conduct himself in the manner of the pious. The movement founded by Israel ben Eliezer in the 18th century adopted the term Hasidim in the original connotation. But when the sector grew and developed specific attributes from the 1770s, the names gradually acquired a new meaning. Its common adherents belonged to groups each headed by a spiritual leader, were henceforth known as Hasidim. This linguistic transformation paralleled that of the word tzaddik, righteous, which the Hasidic leaders adopted for themselves through their also known colloquially as Rebbe, or by the honorific Admor. Originally denoting an observant moral person in Hasidic literature, tzaddik became synonymous with the often hereditary master heading a sect of followers. In most Hasidic groups, apostates, people who abandon their Hasidic community, may face threats, hostility, violence, and various punitive measures, among them separation of children from their disaffiliated parents, especially in divorce cases. Due to their strictly religious education and traditionalist upbringing, many who leave their sects have few viable work skills or even command of the local language, as their integration into the broader society is often difficult. Let's look at the Hasidic Judaism dressing. Within the Hasidic world, it is possible to distinguish different Hasidic groups by subtle differences in dress. Much of the Hasidic dress was historically the clothing of all Eastern European Jews, influenced by the style of Polish-Lithuanian nobility. Furthermore, Hasidim have attributed religious origins to specific Hasidic items of clothing. Hasidic men most commonly wear dark overclothes. On weekdays, they wear a long black cloth jacket called a rakel, and on Jewish holidays, the bekishe zaidene kapote, which in Yiddish means a satin kaftan, a long black jacket but made of satin fabric, traditionally silk. Most Hasidim do not wear neckties. Various symbolic and religious qualities are attributed to Hasidic dress, though they are mainly apocryphal, and the clothes' origin is cultural and historical. For example, the long overcoats are considered modest. The shtremel, a fur hat, is supposedly related to shatnez, the biblical prohibition against wearing wool and linen together in the same garment. So the fur hat keeps one warm without using wool. The fur headdresses on the Shabbat, once common among all wedded Eastern European Jewish males, are still worn by non-Hasidic Perushim, Jewish disciples, on Elijah ben Solomon Zalman, who left Lithuania at the beginning of the 19th century to settle in Palestine. A gartel, Yiddish for belt, divides the Hasid's lower parts from his upper parts, implying modesty, chastity, and for Kabbalistic reasons, Hasidim button their clothes right over left. Hasidic men customarily wear black hats during the weekdays and do nearly all Haredi men today. A variety of hats are worn depending on the group. Shabbat men often pinch their hats to form a triangle on the top. Sadmar men wear an open crown hat with rounded edges, and Samet velvet or beaver hats are worn by many Galician and Hungarian Hasidic men. Following a biblical commandment not to shave the sides of one's face, male members of most Hasidic groups wear long, uncut side locks called peyot or peyes. Some Hasidic men shave off the rest of their head. Not every Hasidic group requires long peyos, and not all Jewish men with peyos are Hasidic, but all Hasidic groups discourage the shavings of one's beard. Most Hasidic boys receive their first haircuts ceremonially at age 3. Hasidic women wear clothing adhering to the principles of modest dress in Jewish law. This includes long conservative skirts and sleeves past the elbow, as well as covered necklines. Also, the women wear stockings to cover their legs. In some Hasidic groups, such as Satmar or Toldot Aharon, the stockings must be opaque. In keeping with Jewish law, married women cover their hair using either a shaitel, a wig, a tikkel, a headscarf, a snood, a hat, or a beret. In some Hasidic groups, such as Satmar, women may wear two heads coverings, a wig and a scarf, or a wig and a hat. Hasidic Jews, like many other Orthodox Jews, typically produce large families. The average Hasidic family in the United States has 8 children. This is followed out of a desire to fulfill the biblical mandate to be fruitful and multiply. Most Hasidim speak the language of their countries of residence, but use Yiddish among themselves as a way of remaining distinct and preserving tradition. Thus, children are still learning Yiddish today, and the language, despite predictions to the contrary, had not died. Yiddish newspapers are still published, and Yiddish fiction is being written, primarily aimed at women. Even films in Yiddish are being produced within the Hasidic community. Some Hasidic groups, such as Satmar and Toldot Aharon, actively oppose the everyday use of Hebrew, which they consider a holy tongue. The use of Hebrew for anything other than prayer and study is, according to them, profane, and so Yiddish is the vernacular and common tongue for most Hasidic communities around the world. Let's take a moment and briefly look at Hasidic dynasties. In Israel, the largest Hasidic concentrations are in the Haredi neighborhoods of Jerusalem, including Ramot Alon and Batei Ungarin, in the cities of Bnei Brak and Elad, and in the West Bank settlements of Modil Ilit and Beitar Ilit. There is considerable presence in other specifically Orthodox municipalities or enclave, like Kiryat Sanz and Netanya. In the United States, most Hasidim resides in New York, though there are small communities across the entire country. Brooklyn, particularly the neighborhoods of Borough Park, Williamsburg, and Crown Heights, has an especially large population. Another large population resides in the hamlet of Muncie in the Hudson Valley region of New York. In the same region, New Square and Kiryas Joel are rapidly growing all Hasidic enclaves, one founded by the Tver dynasty and the other by Satmar. In Britain, Stamford Hill is home to the largest Hasidic community in the country, and there are others in London and Manchester. In Canada, Kiryas Tosh is a settlement populated entirely by Tosh Hasidim, and there are more adherents of other sects in and around Montreal. There are more than a dozen Hasidic dynasties with a large following, and over 100 with have small or minuscule adherents, sometimes below 20 people, with a presumptive rabbi holding the title more as a matter of prestige. Many courts became completely extinct during the Holocaust, like the Alexander Hasidic dynasty from Aleksandrów Łódzki in Poland, which numbered tens of thousands in 1939 and barely exists today. The largest sect in the world, with some 26,000 members, households, which constitute 20% of all Hasidim, is Satmar, founded in 1905 in the Romanian Satu Mare town and currently based in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and Kiryas Joel. Satmar is known for its extreme conservatism and opposition to both the State of Israel and Zionism. The sect underwent a schism in 2006 when two competing factions emerged, led by rival brothers Aaron Teitelbaum and Zalman Teitelbaum. The second largest court worldwide, with some 11,600 households, or 9% of all Hasidim, is Ger, established in 1859 in Gora Kavaria near Warsaw. For decades, it was a dominant power in Israel and exposed a moderate line towards Zionism and modern culture. The third largest dynasty is Vishnitz, a charismatic sect founded in 1854 in Vishnitsia, Bukovina. A moderate group involved in Israeli politics, it is split into several branches which maintain cordial relations. The main partition is between Vishnitz Israel and Vishnitz Mansi. In total, all Vishnitz sub-courts constitute over 10,500 households. The fourth largest dynasty, with some 7,000 households, is Belz, established in 1817 in the namesake town of Belz, north of Lvov in Ukraine. The Bobovar dynasty, founded in 1881 in Bobova, West Galicia, constitutes some 4,500 households in total and has undergone a bitter succession strife since 2005, eventually forming the Bobov 3,000 households and Bobov 45 1,500 household sects. There are two other populous Hasidic subgroups which do not function as classical rebbe-headed courts, but as decentralized movements retaining some of the characteristic of early Hasidism. Breslau rose under its charismatic leader Nachman of Breslau in the early 19th century. Critical of all other rebbes, he forbade his followers to appoint a successor upon his death in 1810. his acolytes led small groups of adherents persecuted by other Hasidim and disseminated his teachings. The original philosophy of the sect elicited great interest among modern scholars, and that led many newcomers to Orthodox Judaism to join it. Numerous Breslau communities, each led by its own rabbi, now have thousands of full-fledged followers and far more admirers and semi-committed supporters. It is estimated that the full committed population of Breslauers may be estimated at about 7,000 households. Shabbat Lubavitch, originating in the 1770s, did have hereditary leadership, but always stressed the importance of self-study rather than reliance on the righteous. Its seventh and last leader, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, converted into a vehicle for Jewish outreach. By his death in 1994, it had many more semi-engaged supporters than Hasidim in the strict sense, and they are still hard to distinguish. Shabbat's own internal phone books list some 16,800 member households. No one succeeded Schneerson, and the sect operates as a large network of communities with independent leaders. Let's now take a closer look at two of the major Hasidim communities, the Satmar and the Shabbat. Satmar Hasidims originated from the city then Zatmat Meri in Hungary, now Satu Mare in Romania, where the sect was founded in 1905 by Rabbi Joel Teitelbaum as an offshoot of the Sighet dynasty from the Sighet town in Romania, which was led by Teitelbaum's father. When his father died, the position of Grand Rebbe passed to Teitelbaum's older brother. A small following viewed Joel as the true heir and chose to follow him from Sighet to Satu Mare. In 1928, he was appointed as the chief rabbi of Satmar. This caused major conflicts within the Jewish community, but Teitelbaum eventually accepted the position and became a prominent Hasidic leader. In March 1944, the German army occupied Hungary. The Jewish population was moved to Satu Mare ghetto and then quickly deported to concentration camps. Most died in these camps. Rabbi Teitelbaum was spared by a rescue mission that sent him to Bergen-Belsen concentration camp with the knowledge that he would soon board a train for Switzerland and then go to Palestine. His whole family died in the German camps. In 1946, after 2.5 years in Palestine, Rabbi Teitelbaum moved to the United States. Rabbi Teitelbaum set out to make a secure home for his followers in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, after most of the Satmar sect was killed during the Holocaust. Thousands of Hasidic Holocaust survivors from Eastern Europe, whose communities were destroyed, moved to Williamsburg and became loyal members of the Satmar sect during this time. Because of America's separation of church and state, Teitelbaum was better able to establish the Satmar sect as an independent community with its own network of business and social institutions. The Satmar chose Williamsburg because they saw it as a place separate from the material and cultural distractions of middle-class Jewish life because it wasn't already a Jewish neighborhood. Due to continued population growth and the challenges associated with living in a crowded city, the Satmar sect began constructing Kiryat Joel, a new all-Hasidic village in upstate New York. After Rabbi Joel Teitelbaum's successor Moshe died in 2006, a divide in the sect occurred when both his sons wanted to lead the Satmars. Now, Aaron Teitelbaum leads the Satmars of Kiryat Joel, and his brother Zalman Teitelbaum leads the Satmars of Williamsburg. Kiryat Joel's population is now over 25,000 people and is estimated to become a city of 100,000 people by 2040. One of the fundamental beliefs that distinguishes the Satmar sect is their opposition to the State of Israel. They believe that the Jewish people were not meant to return to Israel through exertion of physical force, but were instead meant to wait for divine intervention, messianic destiny. Another key tenet of Satmar beliefs is a rejection of modernity and the preservation of three things: names, language, and clothing. As leading 19th century Austro-Hungarian Rabbi Moses Sofer dictated, all that is new is forbidden by the Torah. This belief had continued to govern the Satmar community. In modern day, technically, the use of TVs, computers, and other technology is discouraged, but allowances are made in order to facilitate daily life and communication. Use of the internet is heavily restricted. An essential part of this rejection of modernity is the use of Yiddish as a primary language and the wearing of clothing that honor attire worn by their ancestors and also serves to separate and distinguish followers from the rest of the world. Religious education is a top priority for the group, and the community run its own schools known as the yeshivas. Some who have left the community have alleged that the yeshivas teach minimal, if any, secular curriculum such as courses in English or math, leading to graduates unprepared to function in the economy at a basic level. Community advocates dispute this fact, arguing that study of the Torah, a central text of Judaism, provide all the necessary training for young people's growth. The distinctions in education practices for Satmar girls and boys is representative of a broader gendered assumptions for men and women in the community. Satmar boys engage in extensive study of Talmudic and Hasidic literature, while girls receive an education more focused on Jewish laws and Hasidic traditions. Girls receive more secular education in English, social studies, and sciences, as they are expected to obtain paid employment to help out their families financially and save their own wedding and future families. However, the pursuit of higher education for women is discouraged, as it might interfere with their ability to have and nurture a large family. Adult Satmar women often work through their primary take on roles with circumscribed responsibilities like secretary, shopkeeper, or yeshiva teacher. After marriage, many men go into full-time study of the Talmud at the Kollel for a few years. A Kollel is an institute for advanced study of the Torah and other religious literature reserved for married men. As the couple matures and has their own family, strong emphasis is placed on the man supporting his family and community institutions. In general, modesty is a commanding principle of female life, and mixed social events, co-education, or performing in front of men is prohibited. Satmar marriages are usually arranged when women are between the age of 18 and 22. Economic prosperity and social standing of the parents are the main factors taken into consideration in arranging a suitable marriage. Children of famous Satmar lineages, children of famous scholars and authors, or children of rabbis or institutional leaders are the most sought of after partners. At the wedding celebration, men and women celebrate separately with the bride and groom, and the two receptions are held simultaneously. The bride and groom are separated from the engagement until the wedding and are united in a ceremony in which the groom put a veil over the bride's face called the bedaken. Then the actual ceremony takes place under a huppah, a canopy over the couple. At the end of the wedding, family members or respected individuals come to dance a mitzvah tanz with the bride, a dance in which they hold one end of a long cord and the bride holds the other end. Now let's talk a little bit about the Chabad Lubavitch Hasidim. Chabad, also known as Lubavitch or Chabad, originated from Eastern Europe and it's one of the largest Hasidic dynasties. Chabad is one of the world's best-known Hasidic movements. Unlike most Hasidim groups, which are self-segregating, Chabad mainly operates in the wider world and it caters to secularized Jews. Founded in 1775 by Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the name Chabad is an acronym formed from the three Hebrew words, Chochmah, Binah, Da'ah, for the first three sefirot, or emanations by which God was said to become manifest, of the Kabbalistic tree of life, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, which represent the intellectual and Kabbalistic underpinnings of the movement. The name Lubavitch derives from the town Lubavitchi in Russia, in which the now dominant line of leaders resided from 1813 to 1915. In the 1930s, the sixth Rebbe of Chabad, Rabbi Yosef Itzhak Schneerson, moved the center of the Chabad movement from Russia to Poland. After the outbreak of the Second World War, he moved the center of the movement to Brooklyn, New York. Between 1951 and 1994, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson transformed the movement into one of the most widespread Jewish movements in the world. Under his leadership, Chabad established a large network of institutions that seek to satisfy the religious, social, and humanitarian needs of Jews across the world. Chabad institutions provide outreach to unaffiliated Jews and humanitarian aid, as well as religious, cultural, and educational activities. The global population of Chabad has been estimated to be between 90 and 95,000 adherents, accounting for 13% of the global Hasidic population. However, up to 1 million Jews are estimated to attend Chabad services at least once a year. Historian Jonathan Sarna had characterized Chabad as having enjoyed the fastest rate of growth of any Jewish religious movements in the period of 1945 to 2015. This concludes episode 15 on Hasidim, and in the next episode we'll be discussing the klezmer music and its connection to Romania. Until then, be well.